This episode of RHR was brought to you by Unchained. Unchained is here building out the financial services platform for Bitcoin Standard. Their cornerstone product is their Vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig Vault where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. This is a collaborative custody model. They're expanding the offerings for their Vault where you can hold 1 key and you can delegate keys to other institutions. You can hold no keys if you're an enterprise level. They have a lending desk as well. You can use Bitcoin as collateral. If you're a business, to get out a U.S. dollar loan. They have an IRA product. If you want to roll your fiat IRA into Bitcoin, Unchained makes it very easy. They're expanding their product offering every day. They have a trading desk if you want to buy large sums of Bitcoin and send it straight to cold storage, multi-sig cold storage. They make it very easy. Go to unchained.com, set up a call with their consultation team today, their concierge service team. Use the code RHR for $50 off that consultation. Unchained.com. Use the code RHR. This episode of RHR was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space, including this block clock, which is right behind me. Their hardware wallets are the best. I use the Cold Card Q. It's been my daily driver for many months now, and I think it is the best hardware wallet on the market. It is a beautiful form factor. Looks somewhat like a BlackBerry. It's got a battery pack. You never have to plug it into an internet connected device. However, it is QR code and NFC compatible. It's got a QR scanner and an NFC compatible device in it. They just pushed push TX functionality to the Cold Card Q firmware. Actually happened yesterday. And so now if you want to construct and sign a transaction on the Cold Card and then broadcast it via NFC and mempool.space, you can do that with your phone very easily. Best hardware in the space. Go to coinkite.com, pick up a Q, pick up a Cold Card MK4, pick up the SATS cards, the tab signer, the block clocks. If you want the best hardware, go to CoinKite.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
What a week. I'm just going to open every week with that now.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually can.
Yeah, we've got a tropical storm rolling through the area. So that's why I'm in a sweatshirt. It's raining out. So if you hear some raindrops in the background, please don't complain. Just enjoy the tranquil sounds of nature.
Definitely complain. Huh.
What a week.
We appreciate the complaints.
Yeah. I think it just makes sense to jump in the Clark's dashboard and get a snapshot of where we're at now, and then we can backtrack and talk about what happened this week.
I mean, the important thing is, just before we get to the dashboard, the important thing is I think we can officially put to rest Marty's claim of no dumps this cycle. We can put that to rest, and Marty officially declared a dump on Nostr. I saw him authorized said verbiage.
And it followed up with no further comment, so I will not be commenting on the dump that happened.
We're going to have to wait till September for his next commentary on whether or not we're in the session. Okay, let's go to the dashboard.
So we dumped. We'll talk about the dump. we've recovered from the dump, too.
Current price of Bitcoin.
Current price of Bitcoin is 59,470 cuck bucks. Approaching $60,000, we're at 1,682 sats per cuck buck, currently sitting at a $1.17 trillion market cap. We're at block height 855,937. If you recall, right before last week's episode, we had the largest absolute difficulty adjustment, upwards of 10.5%. We've had many blocks come in since last week and today's episode. We are currently 863 blocks away from the next adjustment, estimated to be next Wednesday, August 14th. And as of right now, that's looking like a negative adjustment
of negative 4.4%. Block's been coming in at 10 minutes and 27 seconds on average. There are currently 200,375 transactions in Clark's mempool, his well-endowed mempool, and there are 231,494 transactions in Mempool's mempool, and cheap block space right now across the board. We're seeing 3 sats per V-byte, only 120 blocks of transactions in the largest mempool in the world right now. So who knows? Maybe we'll clear this weekend.
They should put that tagline in the, like, in the browser tab, the largest mempool in the world.
So that's the state of the network. The state of the Bitcoin market is drastically different today than it was on Monday morning, and it was drastically different on Monday when we recorded.
Yeah, what was the price last RHR? Last RHR was 65.4.
Yeah.
Okay.
65.4.
So we're down like 10% from last week's RHR.
Yes. And we were down way more than that, more than 20% at one point, 21% to be exact.
I think we hit 49, right?
We did. I'm looking at BitBo right now, seeing 49,722.
Fucking crazy.
On Monday. And so we whipsawed 65, 49, back at 59. What happened?
Oh my God. Well, first of all, first of all, stay humble, stack sats. So the degen traders are getting liquidated in both directions, while the humble stackers remain unfazed. But let's talk about why the dump happened. And
yeah, well, stay humble. Now that you mention it, to put that into perspective, I got one point Monday morning, over 250,000 leveraged traders were wiped out, and over $1 billion worth of margin trading got wiped out in the volatility on Monday morning.
Nice.
So after recorded, as is typical with big news events, they wait till after RHR. So Friday in the US, we had jobs numbers come out and economic data, and they were well below expectations. Unemployment rate went up. Manufacturing data was bad. And people started saying, it looks like we're in a recession. Over the weekend, as things progressed, things in Japan started to blow up. For those who were unaware, the Bank of Japan raised their interest rate by 25 bips not too long ago, a few weeks ago. And it seems like that move, coupled with the bad economic data out of the U.S., started to get a lot of traders offsides. And so you had the Nikkei down. The Nikkei, down significantly. The yen was crashing against the dollar, or the dollar was crashing against the yen. And the price of Bitcoin over the weekend went down significantly as people were basically looking at Japan and saying things are not going to look good Sunday night and Monday morning. And so they started selling off their Bitcoin in mass. And I think it's important to highlight that this is one of Bitcoin's value props, is its liquidity profile. Trades 24/7, 365. You get bad news on a Friday, markets close, looks like things are going to be terrible on Monday. And Bitcoin is the only market that people, the only true free market, as we named this address, this episode, that people can access for liquidity to make sure that they don't get blown up in other parts of their portfolio when the markets reopen on Sunday night and Monday morning.
I mean, even when retail opened Monday morning, like all the major online brokerage accounts were all down. So even when markets opened, they still couldn't trade. Like Charles Schwab was down, all those were down.
It's another value prop of Bitcoin. You control your money if you hold your keys. You're always able to access your Bitcoin, no matter what's happening.
What was kind of interesting there was because, and this is something we saw in 2020 too, in March 2020, during the COVID shock to the markets, where Bitcoin fell to like $3,500. What we see is because Bitcoin is so saleable and because it's liquid 24/7, 365 market, no circuit breakers, no off hours by design. What we see is it tends to correct first as a macro indicator and then come back first. And it was kind of interesting on Monday. If I recall correctly, on Monday, we briefly tapped 49 was right before markets opened, right before TradFi suit markets opened on Monday morning. And I think a lot of people expected Bitcoin to continue to dump with the rest of the stock market selling off. But instead, that's kind of where it found its floor. And you know, TradFi buyers and the ETFs and stuff started rallying into Bitcoin in a big way. It's an interesting phenomenon because this is the first time it's happened where there's actually like ETFs or there's actually these large exchange traded products buying Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, the market, broader market's wisening up. It was highly encouraging to see that all those actors saw the 20% dump as an opportunity to get cheap sats. And I mean, the timing too, very interesting considering the fact that yesterday was the day in which Morgan Stanley Wealth Advisors, 15,000 of them, were officially able to go out and pitch the Bitcoin ETFs, iBit and Fidelity's ETF specifically, to their clients.
Did you see, we'll stay on the subject, but did you see Pavelnex's all caps YouTube chat post?
No.
Love you, Pavel. He says, WTF, RHR is not canceled? ? Best news of the week. Also, fuck you too for giving us heart attacks. Kissy face.
This is the reunion tour. Week two of the reunion tour. So we ended the show and then quickly hopped on the reunion tour.
And to everyone in the YouTube chat, just a reminder, we do have our Noster live chat at rhr.tv/stream. It looks like an Anon, Ride or Die Freak, zapped us 21,000 sats. And Pauly, another Ride or Die Freak, zapped us 42,000 sats, saying, appreciate y'all. We appreciate you guys. Thanks for supporting the show with your hard-earned Bitcoin.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And especially since it has more purchasing power now than it did compared to last week's episode. So really appreciate that.
It's crazy. Like Japanese rates just changed, what it was like 0.25% or something. And it just like broke everything. Like there's just panic in the streets. Barely moved.
I'm going to find a chart like that really highlights how little they change rates. And so like everybody's become a yen carry trade.
This is a yen carry trade expert podcast now.
Yeah. But essentially what the Bank of Japan, the carry trade, described as succinctly as possible, kept rates low since 2008, kept lowering them, and people basically looked at that as an arbitrage opportunity. They could borrow yen and push it into higher yielding government debt instruments like U.S. Treasuries and other bonds, and they would essentially get cheap money in Japan, funnel it into higher yielding assets, whether that was bonds or equities, and basically rode that trade for a significant amount of time. Open up the chart, Logan, so people can see it better, but it's literally almost imperceptible on this long-term chart.
Yeah.
And they raise it by 25 bips and everybody finds themselves offside. And so you had cascading liquidations happening. The Bank of Japan came out, I believe, on Tuesday or Wednesday. I think it was Tuesday, and said, we're not going to raise rates anymore. and this was not long after, like, the first hike. I think they were positioning themselves like, we're gonna keep raising rates to try to bring down inflation after this initial hike. And they quickly had to come back and say, never mind, we're not going to do that anymore. And so, it's pretty fucked out there in fiat world.
Mandibles and Bitcoin standard.
Yeah. And then, Logan, go to James's profile, his latest tweet too. Just another thing that's happening this week, not in Japan, but here in the U.S., is the 10-year and 30-year treasury auctions were absolutely dog shit this week. And so nobody wants U.S. debt. The central banks can't raise rates much more without blowing up the markets. And so the fiat world is pretty fucked right now. And something to be aware of. The one word phrase to describe it is mandibles. Is that correct, Matt?
Mandibles than Bitcoin standard.
Yeah.
You either read it or you live it.
Well, you can read it and live it. Like if you read it, you're going to live it no matter what. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, but it's less provocative.
Yeah,
it's not a catchy one-liner. I mean, I would like, if you actually read Mandibles, it takes place in New York among an unprepared population that is, you know, very dense and has poor governance. Presumably, if you read it and expect it, and you start improving your skills today and improving your family's standing today, going into it, it'll be way less severe for you and you'll have a much better outcome. So that's why I say read it or live it.
Yeah.
But you can also just sum it up with just, if you stay humble and stack sats, you should be good. But I think a key aspect here is like, you need real skills, like not only skills on the Bitcoin side. It's important to improve your skill set across the board and become more self-sufficient and robust as a family.
Yes. Yes, that is true. And yeah, so Bitcoin's recovering pretty quickly, and I think that's a sign that I think that great, quick.
Logan's the best producer in the game. To the podcast freaks who are listening on audio, Logan whipped up a not yen carry trade expert graphic for us. Thank you.
So it seems pretty clear. I think Bitcoin's rallying because it's clear that the central banks can't raise rates much more. The Bank of Japan's probably going to have to revert. And many people are surmising that the Fed is going to do so too. That was another funny thing to watch play out. You had a bunch of people quickly getting on the CNBC on Monday morning saying that the Fed needs to do emergency rate cuts and then do bigger rate cuts at their official meetings in September. Not wholly understanding that they need Japan to cut rates first, because if the Fed cuts rates in this environment without the Bank of Japan doing it first, it actually exacerbates the problem. You'll have like quick
same thing basically.
Yeah. And
on the opposite side.
Yeah. So it's pretty fucked out there.
I think what a lot of people were expecting was like Papa Fed to come in and at least say, you know, they're like boilerplate thing that they do a lot of times during crisis. Like, we're watching the market activity and we're ready to step in to provide liquidity where needed or something, you know, some bullshit Papa Fed speak. And surprisingly, they didn't do that. I thought they might do that. It should be interesting to see, at least on the macro side, like there are probably a bunch of skeletons out there, walking zombies that are just got absolutely brutalized in this market action. So it should be interesting to see what the fallout is in the short to medium term. But yeah, I mean, on the Bitcoin side, just to reiterate one more time, stay humble, stack sats. Like, there's a bunch of people out there that were long Bitcoin at $65,000. They got liquidated. They went short at $52,000. They got liquidated. And now they're going leverage long again. And they're probably going to get liquidated. Instead of just simply staying humble, stacking sats into cold storage, improving your skills, holding your own keys, not using leverage. It's very simple. On the surface, it's very simple, but it's very hard. It's so simple, it's hard. And most people will unfortunately learn through pain.
Yeah. I mean, there's no better feeling than not having the stress of not being margin long and being able to wake up in the middle of the night on a Sunday and a Monday when the price is falling by 20%. And you're just like, oh shit, open up Strike, River, whatever. And you just smash by and then go back to sleep and you wake up happy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just numb to it at this point. It's just kind of laugh about it a little bit. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I couldn't. I'm just all in. I had no liquidity to smash by. But for those of you that got cheaper sats, here's to you.
Here's to you, freaks. Yeah, and I think it is important to
minimum. It's like fucking E.
I think it's important to really harken back to Bitcoin's reaction in this whole scenario, again, being the fact that it's 24/7, 365. A lot of pundits will look at that price dump and say, oh, I thought Bitcoin was a safe haven asset. Over the long term, it certainly is. It has proven that over 15 years. I think we're pretty confident in saying that it will continue to prove that moving forward. But the other value prop is its liquidity profile. And so if you have a situation where liquidity is crunching, like Bitcoin's the most liquid market that's traded 24/7, 365, people are going to tap into that utility.
It's not mutually exclusive. Bitcoin is the ultimate safe haven asset. Very few people realize that yet, but there's no better place to have your money. And you want a highly liquid, saleable 24/7 free market for your safe haven asset. It's part of what makes it a safe haven asset.
Yeah. Imagine if you're going to get margin called on a Monday and you're like, oh shit, I need to sell some properties I own to cover that margin. Like, not going to happen. It's going to take you months, years, stocks even, not going to happen.
I mean, it also goes to show, like, it's not just custodial risk that makes ETF Bitcoin a shitcoin. It's that you can't trade it like 80% of the time because markets are closed.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a very important point to highlight. Like, and I think that that is like the percentage. You get two whole days, and then where the markets are open.
They're open for like 3 hours a day.
4:30. Yeah, they're open like 7 hours a day. So you get 35 hours a week that you can actually trade the ETFs.
After a decade plus in Bitcoin, it just all seems so insane that that's like, what about like, you like wake up in the morning and like markets don't open for 3 fucking hours. It's like ridiculous. Yeah. You feel like the whole day has gone by. By the
it's
time
really antiquated. Really antiquated.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
And the Zap.stream comments, Ivan's making a good point too. Like, target buys on River and Strike are now clutch. And so maybe you don't have to be an old school smash buyer like me that has to wake up and physically hit the buy. You can set targets now on many of these apps and just sleep and buy in your sleep, which is a good thing.
Just humbly go all in and then stay humble and stack sats from that point forward. if you have target buys set up with excess fiat, you're short Bitcoin.
The had to be a banger day for all these companies that are providing the on ramp to Bitcoin. Banger week, actually.
Yeah, record volumes, record everything.
Yeah.
Massive growth.
With that in mind, probably should mention, if you think this is a good buying opportunity, you haven't taken Matt's advice to heart and going humbly all in yet, and you have an IRA or 401k you want to roll over into Bitcoin, our sponsor Unchained has a deal where they're waiving their fees on their IRA product, I believe until the 15th, so you have a week to take advantage of that. I think that's something like $1,700 in savings that you'll get if you want to roll over your IRA.
The nice thing about the Unchained IRA is it's self-custody. It's multi-sig self-custody, so you hold your own keys. They hold one key and you hold two keys, and you need two keys to spend. So just if you are out there and you're using a custodial Bitcoin IRA product, you should probably move to a self-custody one ASAP, and the easiest way to do that is Unchained. Yeah. So keep that.
The code for the IRA thing, I think, is August IRA. You'll get your fees rate waived there. But if you do like an onboarding, you can use the code RHR and get $50 off any of their products there too. Mid-roll.
I didn't even know we had a code. It's just good. Do. Even if you don't use the code, it's just good practice. Like, this is, if you're going to have a Bitcoin IRA product, this is how it should be done.
Yeah.
This rep of RHR was also brought to you by our good friends at Stack. Stack is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI to make it easy for you to complete complex tasks as a business. They are currently looking for a technical product manager for their coding bounties program. So if you want to go stackwork.com and apply for this job, I would highly do it. Paul and team at Stack are building one of the most incredible and exciting products on the market right now. If you listen to Citadel Dispatch or TFTC with Carlino from Digital Witness, he explained how digital witness used Stack to confirm the results of the Guatemalan presidential election last year. And Stack basically enables you to put out all these tasks. In the case of digital witness, they had a combination of AI and humans complete tasks to prove that votes looked a certain way and said a certain thing. And they got paid out in Bitcoin for it. So they're looking for a technical product manager for their bounties program. So go check them out. Stackwork, that's STAKWORK.com.
This is a bit unnerving to see this week, the Dark Skippy hardware wallet vulnerability disclosure.
Yeah, so I had one of the guys behind this disclosure here at the park last week. They disclosed this, responsibly disclosed this to hardware wallet manufacturers, I think 3 months ago, maybe 2 months, 3 months ago, before they went public with it, which is what you want to see. This is actually not a new type of vulnerability. It's part of an existing known vulnerability class, which is basically, in practice, when you make a Bitcoin transaction, you're making a signature, and you're broadcasting that signature. Malicious firmware, a malicious hardware wallet that's running malicious firmware, can leak that key. Now, can leak your private key, and then your funds can get taken. Now, what they've demonstrated is actually a easier way of doing it that only requires one Bitcoin transaction. So you send one Bitcoin transaction, and then your funds are taken, and they're swept off your hardware wallet. Now, what's particularly dangerous about this attack is an air gap doesn't protect you, because it's actually in the signature of your transaction that you're broadcasting out to the network. So once you're compromised and you make that Bitcoin transaction, the attacker just needs to be watching the blockchain. And it can be anywhere in the world. They could be watching the blockchain and they can sweep you. Now, in practical terms, how do you protect yourself from this type of attack? Well, first of all, the main way we would probably see this attack in practice is malicious firmware. So you already have a hardware device and you go to update your hardware device. And that firmware is actually from an attacker, and it's not from the company or the lead maintainers of the project that you're using, right? So you want to go download an update, and you actually download a malicious update, and you upload that onto your device and you sign a transaction. Now, devices like Cold Card and Ledger and Bitbox that have secure elements, and foundation devices that have secure elements, check that signature. So you know there aren't, they check the signature of the firmware. So the device itself is checking to make sure that the actual developers that you expect to ship the firmware are shipping the firmware, and it's not a malicious firmware that was placed in between you and the developer. Now, obviously that doesn't protect you from the developer being malicious. So if the developer is malicious, what protects us in that situation is reproducible builds and open source code. At the very least, source viewable code, depending on your definition of open source. I'm sure different sections of Bitcoin tribes will be attacking me over however I explain this. But if your source code is viewable and reproducible, then people can keep an eye on the developers and make sure that they're not shipping malicious code. Third, you want to have deterministic nonces. And what that means is this attack relies on this aspect of a hardware signer that is supposed to be providing randomness, entropy, to your signature. And instead of providing true randomness, it's providing known integers to the, you know, the attacker knows what that source is, instead of true randomness. So if you use deterministic nonces, those signatures, and there's a spec for that, should look the same across signers. Okay. Fourth of all, if you use multi-sig and you're either using different vendors, different hardware wallets, or you're using the same hardware wallet on different firmware versions, this attack becomes much more difficult because each one would need to be compromised that is signing. Okay. In practice, what does that mean? What does this mean for an end user? I think, and this is where I will say a full disclosure that CoinKite is a sponsor of the podcast. We are the exclusive, 1031 is the exclusive lead investor of CoinKite. And CoinKite, NVK, and the Seed Signer group fucking hate each other. But I know a lot of you freaks are using Seed Signer devices. It is the most dangerous for users of Seed Signers, particularly if you are passing them around in a community. You're not protecting your device. You're not keeping physical isolation of that device. If that device, because it doesn't have a secure element, has compromised firmware on it, your Bitcoin can be taken. And it can be hard for you to verify that. Now, how can you protect yourself if you are using a Seed Signer in that situation? The single best thing you can do, besides not using one and or using a multi-sig that has multiple different types of devices there, is you should always be making sure that you are checking the hash and the PGP signature of the Seed Signer firmware releases, because your device isn't going to verify that for you, right? If your device has a secure element, it's going to verify that for you. But if your device does not have a secure element, it will not verify it for you. So you have to verify it yourself. If you are using a Mac, which I assume a lot of freaks are, a really easy way to do that is called GPG Suite. It's an app that makes it easy to do GPG verification. If you're using a Linux machine, GPG is built into the command line. And regardless, if you're a Bitcoiner, you should learn how to use these tools. I know a lot of you aren't going to, though, regardless. So I think I summed it all up as easy to understand as possible.
One more attack route that wasn't mentioned was like a supply chain attack. Like if you have...
If the device comes with the firmware already...
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's two more things here, right? If you follow my guide on Cold Card, we run btc.com/coldcard. One of the first things I tell you to do is inspect the device to see if it's been tampered with and then install fresh firmware that you've verified. You should install fresh firmware when you receive it. And then there's another piece, I guess, which is, and we've said this many times on RHR, you shouldn't rush to update to new firmware versions. But yes. I don't know. If people have more questions or commentary, you can put it in the live chat. I mean, Marty, do you have any questions? Do you think, does it make sense to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it is a scary attack because the malicious malware attacks that people are most worried about is that you download malware and it feeds you a bunk address that you send to that you actually don't control. This one, basically being able to send to an address that you do control, but not realizing that you're leaking potential private key information that can be broken, is what makes this one a bit scarier. That's just existing on the chain. And if a attacker knows that you have downloaded the malicious firmware or received a device preloaded with it, they're just scanning the blockchain to re-engineer your private key.
Yeah, I mean, and theoretically, and they go through that. So it's Dark Skippy. Is it darkskippy.com?
Yep.
And Nunchuck also had a good write-up on it, the Nunchuck software wallet. You know, on Dark Skippy, they go through a lot of this stuff, and theoretically, they could do types of attacks where they wait before they start sweeping funds, right? They do delays, do stuff like that. To be absolutely clear, like in practice, usually it's low-hanging fruit stuff that most attacks are just like you receive an email that's like, send me your seed, and like a certain number of people will just send them the seed in the email. Or click a link to a false download that then tells them to put in the seed or something like that. And if this attack ever gets exploited in the wild, we'll probably see something similar to that in the way that it'll be like lowest common denominator stuff. Like it won't be a delayed attack, stuff like that, but it could be theoretically. But yeah, there's one other piece that is like confusing people, because as soon as anything hardware wallet related comes out, there's just so much fucking drama and gaslighting in this space. So two hardware wallets, Jade by Blockstream and Bitbox by Shift Crypto, have something called exfil, anti-exfil on it, which is supposed to protect against this attack. And the way that works is the software wallet that you use with it is also providing a piece of randomness when you're doing that signature generation. Now, obviously, like you need to have anti-klepto is what Rob Hamilton, they call it like anti-exfil, anti-klepto, whatever. It's not finalized for Schnorr. It's just for ECDSA, and which is the old signatures. And obviously it requires you to have a USB connected to your computer as it currently stands. So you come with that additional trade-off of not having air gap. Everything does have trade-offs. It's important for users to be aware. I would say like the single biggest thing I think that this should get to people is, first of all, I mean, I think hardware wallets should absolutely have secure elements, particularly for most users. You know, the average user should have a hardware wallet with a secure element that is automatically verifying signatures. And then second of all, if you're holding large amounts of funds, it should be in multi-sig. It shouldn't be multi-sig all with the same device running the same firmware. And if you do that, then you're protected from most attacks, not just this attack. And the single biggest attack you're protecting yourself from is probably the $50 wrench attack, because wrenches don't cost $5. Mm-hmm. When I went on the radio show in Nashville, my only radio show appearance, the guy was a complete pre-coiner, no coiner. And his first question was like, oh, you store your wealth at home? Like, isn't someone just going to come in there and just rob you? And that'll be, you know, Jameson Lopp covers it at length about like crypto traders and stuff that flaunt their wealth and hold everything in a single exchange wallet, getting robbed all the time, or a single ledger that they have on a chain around their neck. Multi-sig is worth it for that alone. It's gives you an unparalleled level of robust sovereign security in that you can have multiple keys in different locations. And so physical attacks are rendered incredibly difficult to pull off.
Yeah. Makes it much easier to sleep when you know your Bitcoin's in a multi-sig address, not only from the $50 wrench attack, but now from an attack like Dark Skippy.
Yeah. Oh, and then I guess there's a third. So I disclosed our affiliation with CoinKite. I don't know if the Dark Skippy guys did, but they seem above board. So they probably have it somewhere on the website. But they're about to release a hardware wallet that they say solves this problem. So I'm just putting that one out there too, because there should be that big ass disclosure on top of everything. That their hardware wallet apparently is immune to this type of attack.
Yeah. I mean, they mentioned, I don't think they mentioned that it's immune, but they do link to the hardware wallet, which is called Frost Snap. And I think we've talked about it on the show before when they originally released the proof of concept MVP, but it's using Frost and multiple devices to sort of enable you to construct keys, in a what they would deem to be a safer way by sort of splitting it up on these Frost Snap devices.
And it's like human centipede. It's like human centipede. So you stick the devices into each other and then you plug that into your phone. So this is like
how you construct the signature, right?
Two or three multi-sig, and then you plug, it's got just USB-C ports, and you just plug it right into your phone. I have the hardware, thank you guys, but the companion app isn't out yet, so I haven't been able to actually, I'm just able to plug them into each other.
Yeah, it's cool, because we've talked to them about it too, because you can create really unique spending conditions with this type of setup, leveraging Frost, which is really cool. That's also why we do the show week in and week out and have been on top of these topics, because the hardware wallet landscape is evolving and will continue to evolve. And it's important to make sure you're on top of it. The hardware wallet setup that works for you today, that worked for you yesterday, may not be optimal moving forward. And it's not ideal, obviously, but something that you should all be aware of.
Yeah, and just keep physical security of your devices. Like, don't, like, someone shouldn't be able to hold your hardware signers, period. Like, yeah. If you have a secure element, that should protect you, even if they have access to your hardware. But, like, they don't let them have access to your hardware.
That's the lowest hanging fruit for security.
Awesome.
Moving on. Somber news. Mutiny Wallet announced earlier this week that they're going to shut down their wallet software at the end of the year and pivot to basically leveraging a lot of the back-end infrastructure they built to provide that to other businesses. Obviously, this is a company near and dear to our heart, friends with Tony, Paul, and Ben. Work with them closely out of the Commons when I'm in Austin, and obviously 1031 is an investor in Mutiny, and we've been following and talking about this product for well over a year now on this show. Tony wrote a blog post explaining the reasons behind the decision, the tough decision that they made. And I think they revolve around the limitations of the Lightning Network, particularly how to use it in a non-custodial fashion.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things here. First and foremost, these guys are very close friends first. At 1031, we're incredibly proud to support them. We were the only fund to support them. It was us along with some angels. You know, this was not a decision that they made lightly. It's something that they've been considering for months now. And we both have talked through with that team, those three guys, extensively on how they're looking at things and how they want to proceed. And, you know, I think, you know, there's people like to, well, first of all, Mutiny is a completely false project. And I think from a fund perspective, we're very unique in that that we're willing to back companies that are, and not only willing, like, we actually encourage companies to have full FOSS stacks. Mutiny is not the only one. Mempool is another big one. Start9 is a big one. And Primal is also completely FOSS. So even if they stop working on Mutiny, other people can pick it up if they want to, and you can continue to self-host it. And contrary to the conspiracies, NVK did not switch his license because of us. If anything, I encouraged him to do the opposite and not switch his license to a commercially restricted source viewable license.
And you can check the tapes on that. I'm pretty sure we talked about it.
Publicly. It's been talked about publicly before we invested. Okay. But back to Mutiny. You know, at the end of the day, it really came down to two things. It came down to Tony being tired and burnt out about working in Bitcoin, in the Bitcoin space, period. He was exhausted and he lost the passion for it. And at the end of the day, like, I want him to do what he feels most fulfilled doing, and feel as a friend, like, that's, you know, I'm not going to tell him how to live his life. So that's why they're not ending the company. They're pivoting outside of Bitcoin, basically providing enterprise services and using all that tech that they built in terms of securing private keys in a browser locally to do other non-Bitcoin things. And then the second piece was Ben, you know, was frustrated not working on cutting edge Bitcoin on-chain things. So the combination of those two things led to this decision. Ben has left the company. He recently announced, right before Rabbit Hole Recap, that he's moving to Taproot Wizards. Which is, you know, he's his own man. I'm not going to tell him how to live his life, but I wouldn't have done that. But I wish him the best. Tony, Paul, and Marks recently came over from Apple, will continue to lead the company in this new direction. Marks is going to step up as CEO. Tony's going to step down as CEO and go into a CTO role. And Paul is going to continue on as chief product officer. I guess one other aspect here to keep in mind is that they've been doing a lot of work with Fediment, and the Fediment open source project is still very rough around the edges. And it was a very stressful last 3-4 months, making sure users didn't lose funds that were holding them in Fediments. And Fediment right now is much more stable. We have two big things on the list in regards to Fediment. One is that Fediment 0.4.0 was released, which properly fixes that DNS issue we talked about at length, where if one guardian gets put on a spam list, they can't easily rotate. That issue has been fixed. And then secondly, Fedi, the company, which is creates their own front-end client for Fediments, has formally launched. They had a epic 30-minute Apple-style launch release video, and it's out in the wild now. So if you are using one of the Fediments Immunity Wallet, you can now download Fedi and run that. And actually, on that note, by the way, to this idea of this trend of encouraging and supporting founders who move to a false license, Fedi, one of the big announcements in this announcement that Fedi, that has kind of gone under the radar, I think, just because, you know, it was a long launch video and there was a lot of things going on there, is that they are falsing their open sourcing with an AGPL license, their entire stack on the front end side, which is really, really great to see. And is something that I personally am very excited about and happy that they're doing.
Yeah. And that'll be, I think, OB in that announcement. It was at the end, the surprise announcement. I think come January 2026 is the timeline.
Well, no, it's not. They've already committed, though. So it's like at that time, it automatically switches.
Yeah.
It's not like it's not like a political promise that you're hoping that they're going to do. Like per today's license, it automatically switches to AGPL January 2026. Yeah, I mean, the last thing I would add is, you know, I personally, it's a big loss for me, Mutiny. I was very excited about those three guys building together, and I was very excited about Mark's joining. It was a wallet that I used. It was a wallet that I was very encouraged by. I love that they were bleeding edge. I love that it was PWA. I think it's a big loss for the Bitcoin community not having Tony and Paul working on Bitcoin, and it's a big loss for the Bitcoin community having Udi working on whatever he's working on over at Taproot Wizards, not Udi, having Ben working over there at Taproot Wizards. The three of them together were the dream team. And I know as a Mutiny user myself, like, and as someone who's recommended the wallet to people and seen their eyes open up in terms of the easy Nostr contact integration, the fact that you didn't have to manage liquidity, the fact that they had sane privacy defaults to begin with, basically like a Freedom Venmo. It's just a really big loss for the ecosystem. And this is something that has concerned me more and more lately, just because of my increasing focus on supporting open source developers as much as possible, which is the burnout's real. You know, I put a post on Nostr today. Is, you know, I think if you look at it, like, I've been burnt out for at least 3 years now. And I'm not the only one. There's many of us out there that are incredibly burnt out and incredibly tired. And when you see people fall off, it's just really sad to see. And we need to just do our best as a community to just try and support our devs and try and, you know, reduce that expiration rate.
Agreed. It's important too to tune out the noise as well. Like, if you're getting burnout, I think a lot of devs see what's happening in terms of Wall Street coming to Bitcoin and nation states looking like they're going to be embracing Bitcoin, and they see that as an encroachment on the cypherpunk ethos that lives and breathes throughout the Bitcoin protocol, and view it as detrimental to the long-term success of the protocol, which I can see why people believe that. But as we've said for years, many others have said, it's not unique to this show. Like, Bitcoin's open and permissionless, and anybody who wants to leverage the best money that has ever existed is going to do that. Just go monk mode, tune out the noise, work on the products that you want to see in the world, bring them to market, and don't get disenfranchised by the noise that comes with new waves of adoption that are inevitable. They're going to come. There's going to be people that you don't like that embrace Bitcoin and look to leverage it. And that's just the nature of how this protocol operates. And it's actually a beautiful thing. Bitcoin is for enemies. And once more and more of your perceived enemies begin using Bitcoin, don't let that be a detriment to your goals and what you're trying to accomplish. Try and zone it out, but completely agree. I don't know if I would say I'm burnt out. I'm definitely exhausted. This is a never-ending grind. Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're not going anywhere, freaks. We're just going to keep pushing forward. I don't think there's any other option. Look, I mean, building a business is hard. Building any kind of – building an open source project can be even more difficult in terms of lack of funding and lack of support. Building an open source business might be the most difficult thing. And doing it in the Bitcoin industry, building a business in the Bitcoin industry on a Bitcoin standard where capital is incredibly tight and competition is very high and margins are very low, particularly in the wallet space, is a very difficult thing. It's going to take its toll on the best of us. I wish all those guys the best of luck. Tony, Paul, Mark, Ben, you have my wholehearted support. You guys are my close friends. I'll always love you. I don't think I need to tell you guys, but never hesitate to reach out. But it's important to make that clear to the freaks that we stand together incredibly strong.
You know what people love, Matt? You know what people really love? A good comeback story. You know,
I thought it was a rhetorical question. I thought you were going to tell us.
I feel the beginnings of an incredible comeback story right now. Yeah,
I don't know about that.
Yeah, we shall see. Moving down the list into support for open source devs, you really.
Do you see Ivan's answer in the Noster chat?
Porn? God damn it. Ivan, get your head out of the gutter. Porn rots your brain. Scientifically proven. On this topic of supporting devs, both emotionally and financially, ARK has announced that they will be supporting devs and contributing a fixed percentage of their revenue to open source contributors. This is a very important distinction. It's not a portion of their profits, but their overall revenues, which is a big step in the right direction in terms of meaningful support from fund managers. So Kathy Wood, and obviously you are close to this decision, so I'll let you take it from here.
I mean, I think it was an understatement. I've been working on this for about 3 months now. Huge shout out to the ARK team and their support. This is a trend that seems to be accelerating and the momentum strong, and it's really, really great to see. As Marty said, I think Bitwise really led the way by promising percent of profit, reoccurring percent of profit. And why is this important? This is important because, I mean, on OpenSats specifically and on our work at OpenSats, we don't make any money from donations. So you know, we're out there spending our time trying to solicit funds for developers and not making any money from it. And it's exhausting, quite frankly. It's extremely exhausting. So having long-term reoccurring commitment that scales up with profitable businesses is incredibly helpful. Now, they took it a step further because it's not a percent of profit, it's a percent of revenue. So they could actually be losing money. As long as revenue continues to increase, so does their contribution, which is really great to see. I mean, Logan, can you just play the clip? This is Kathy Wood of ARK, founder of ARK.
In order to be true to what we're telling you, contributing to this ecosystem, these organizations and others, we are going to donate consistently a percent of our revenues, not profits.
Wow.
And so that means we will, this is in perpetuity as long as we're still around. And as these funds are, and they're not even really profitable yet, but that's why we decided to go the route of a percent of revenues.
That's amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you for all you do. Incredible work.
First of all, I wanted to thank Kathy and everyone at ARK.
Yeah, I mean, that's me.
What you said there?
Yeah, I mean, what I was about to say there is that this is not just lip service. The first payments have already come through. It's split evenly between HRF, OpenSats, and Brink, which is also a model that I really like. So it doesn't, you know, centralize on OpenSats. I want as many organizations out there and as many distributed ways of funding developers as possible. And I've said many times, I would like to see direct developer funding. Maybe that happens through Nostr's apps. I think Nostr's apps could be a way that people, developers, find sustainable funding without middlemen. And until then, organizations like OpenSats, HRF, and Brink are standing by to provide sustainable funding, because it is quite early in terms of direct funding. Now, some people have asked for specific numbers. We obviously have the specific numbers already. We've gotten the first payment. ARK is a quite large TradFi financial institution. So like a proper press release is going to go out that has to go through their compliance team and stuff like that. So you'll get more information soon. But just know the first payments to HRF, Brink, and OpenSats have already come in. On OpenSats side, we immediately convert it to Bitcoin because it comes in as fiat. All donations get converted to Bitcoin if they don't come in as Bitcoin. That announcement was on the Bitcoin Brainstorm podcast. So that's a podcast that's in partnership with ARK and Bitcoin Park. As some of you might be aware, there was a lot of drama on the internet over the claim that Michael Saylor advised ARK not to support open source contributors out of the ETF.
Who started that? That
was my claim on Nostr. I just want to highlight here that very grateful for ARK supporting open source contributors. And I'm also very grateful for Michael Saylor coming down to Bitcoin Park and having a fireside chat with me. That was recently just published to the SIL dispatch feeds. And I briefly mentioned that we've had productive conversations about him supporting open source contributors. We do not specifically talk about that in that conversation. So I don't want you to feel like we're getting rug pulled. But I think I can wholeheartedly say that whether financially or not, I think Michael will be a powerful supporter for the open source movement. And hopefully there's something that can be announced in the relatively near future.
It was a fireside chat. I had the pleasure of being in.
Thank you, sir.
In the crowd for that. And that's one that I think everybody should go watch, that and Saylor's presentation on at the Bitcoin conference. Because number one, I think your chat really, for me at least personally, brought some clarity to his position as Bitcoin is money. And it seems like a smart position that he's taking, which is like, hey, if you're going to take on all these capital gains taxes, like it literally doesn't make sense to try to use it as money at this point in time. Like, we need them to eliminate cap gains, and then yeah, we should use it as money. Because there was a lot of people who were convinced, myself included, that he thought that you should never use Bitcoin as money. And even though people are listening to it using it as money now, there are certainly better conditions that could be brought to the market, particularly around capital gains, that would make it gangbusters to use as a daily currency, make it less stressful at the very least. And then on top of that too, like really laying out the playbook for the treasury strategy, which is you look at the asset value on your balance sheet, and then you look at the premium that the stock market's putting on the value of those assets that are held on your balance sheet, and you look at the delta of the actual value and the premium, and you issue shares or do a convertible debt note and buy Bitcoin with it, which pushes up your book value, and then rinse and repeat as the premium materializes. And I think that is going to be a trend in public markets specifically that accelerates from here. It's already accelerating, but I think the playbook has been laid bare, and it makes a lot of sense. Who knows how long those premiums will persist, but as long as they do, it's a smart trade.
Yeah, I mean, look, huge shout out to Michael for he did his Nashville Bitcoin Conference keynote, immediately got in the car, came over to Bitcoin Park, probably the busiest week of his year, to a packed house at Bitcoin Park, and sat down with me, and we did a tight 45-minute rip. I really appreciate him doing that. I think the freaks should go listen to the conversation. You can either search Citadel Dispatch on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app. You should definitely listen to it. It was a fun one, and hopefully it's the first of many. It was just great.
Yeah. And staying on this tip of open source funding, Build Asset Management is going to donate 10% of management fees to support open source Bitcoin development. It's another good thing to see. Not profits, not revenues either, but management fees.
Momentum, freaks. Momentum. It's building. So this is a percent. Marty and I know the Build guys well. They're good. They're good people. They reached out. They said they want to work together with OpenSats. I said, hell yeah. We're proud to announce that they're going to be providing 10% of the management fees of this specific credit product that they are. They've already partially launched, I believe, but it's in the process of launching. And it's going to be split evenly between HRF and OpenSats. So just continuing the momentum here behind the scenes. A lot more we're working on, just trying to get as much sustainable funding as possible. As many of you might be aware, a lot of this funding in the beginning, you know, came from Jack Dorsey, and we remain incredibly grateful for that. But it's incredibly important for us to make our donor sources more robust and diversify where that money is coming from as much as possible across the ecosystem. So we're working hard on that. Huge shout out to the OpenSats team, GG, our fearless leader, and everyone else that makes this organization run. It's, you know, I might be one of the most outspoken people at OpenSats, but it's very much a team operation, and it's an insane organization in terms of the scale that we're trying to accomplish here, and how many people are working on it for free or very little pay. So thank you all.
Yeah. And just a note on Build too. I think Build, the fact that they exist, is an incredible indication that we're moving in the right direction. So for those who are unfamiliar with Build's model, they're essentially raising credit funds. So they raise dollars and then they're going to deploy it into Bitcoin backed credit. So I believe they're starting with Unchained's lending desk. And this is, as we mentioned earlier, the bond markets are all fucked. Credit investors, like whether you like it or not, these large capital allocators, institutions have buckets of capital that they need to allocate, and they have different assets from which they can actually allocate into. They have mandates that put a percentage on particular assets, whether that be stocks, bonds, private equity, and they have capital in those slivers that they have to deploy into. And credit is one of the big, large slivers, and credit funds are desperately looking for relatively low risk, high yielding credit products. And as we've seen with Unchained Lending Desk, which Bill will be supplying dollars to out of this fund, which is public knowledge, it is probably one of the most mispriced credit products on the market, in the sense that the way they do the custody, the fact that they don't rehypothecate, and where their LTV levels are at, it's relatively, compared to other credit products, low risk. They haven't had a loan loss since they launched a lending desk over 7 years ago. And so the fact that Build exists has recognized a product like Unchained's Lending Desk as a viable credit opportunity to produce returns is an incredible signal. And hopefully more funds like Build coming to market for anybody who uses something like Unchained's Lending Desk will help bring the cost of capital down on those loans, because that's a large misconception that exists out there. People look at an Unchained loan and see the higher interest rate, and they think Unchained's gouging their eyes out and just trying to take opportunity of lack of dollar supply and the demand to take out these loans for people who don't want to sell their Bitcoin. But it's really the people providing that capital on the back end that dictate where that interest rate ends up. So more of these funds coming, creating competition on the dollar supply side of these lending desks, should in the long term bring down the cost of capital for these loans.
Yeah, I mean, rates at scale, like as we go through this adoption curve, rates for over collateralized, non-rehypothecated Bitcoin loans should be like one of the lowest rates out there. It should be incredibly cheap, because as Marty said, the risk to the lender is nearly zero. Like, it's very, very close. Like, I'm trying not to risk-free yield or whatever. Like, I'm not going to fall into the meme. When Marty says there's no loan losses, like, he doesn't mean like customers haven't gotten liquidated. When Bitcoin price goes down, customers may get liquidated. But because it's over-collateralized and not rehypothecated, so the funds are not re-lent out, that Bitcoin collateral, what that allows is it allows Unchained to basically liquidate your Bitcoin in a situation where you can't repay the loan before there's any losses there for the lender. So the lender gets back their money. The user of the product would still get liquidated in that situation, and it could be very painful for them. And this is key, because this is not hypothetical. We went through a massive lending crisis in the Bitcoin community, where we saw FTX go down, we saw Barry Silbert get wrecked, we saw BlockFi go down, and all these guys were playing with rehypothecated, not fully collateralized, or not over collateralized, but not even fully collateralized loans. With Unchained, there was no loan losses for the lenders. So it's just a pretty interesting, very, very, very interesting trend to watch. We've never really seen a financial product like this before. And it's only possible because Bitcoin, first of all, can be held in multi-sig, because you can easily verify, and audit, the contents of a wallet. And it's immediately saleable in a global free market.
Yeah. Yeah. With that said, taking out an Unchained loan is akin to taking out leverage. So do it responsibly if you need to, or if you're going to.
Yeah. I mean, you probably should just, like, if you need to spend, just sell Bitcoin.
Actually, Paulie's making an interesting point in those app.stream comments, where 60% interest is lower than, or it's not Paulie's, Dylan, 60% is cheaper than cap gains. So
just pay your cap gains. And the only time I ever considered doing it was I considered doing it to buy a house. And this was like at the top of the 2021 cycle. And I just would have gotten it was like 65K or whatever. I would have gotten absolutely wrecked. The lesson there wasn't that I sold and just paid cap gains. I just didn't buy the house, which was, that's probably the real recommendation. Live within your means and be conservative, stay humble. But yeah, it is, it's a leverage product. It's a leverage product, and don't over, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it very lightly.
Yeah. Don't, on
the lender side, you're getting great rates, to dump fiat in there. The bigger issue right now, that just big picture, and maybe it's interesting to freaks, maybe it's not, is the people that realize that, you know, getting 14% lending dollars for over-collateralized non-rehypothecated Bitcoin loans tend to rather buy Bitcoin, which appreciates year over year 63% over the last decade. So that's where the cost of capital is really crunched. Is that the people that understand Bitcoin's qualities that would be most likely to make that deal just would rather turn their fiat into Bitcoin than actually lend it out.
Yeah. But if Build is successful, which I think they will be with their first credit fund, like I think the people that are forced to allocate into credit will begin to see this area of the market as much more appealing. And again, reiterate, should bring rates down in the long run.
They also have this separate product. Someone's asking T33TS about their just regular multi-sig vault product. So their regular multi-sig vault product, you hold two keys, they hold one key. In terms of that vulnerability, that dark Skippy that we mentioned, yes, that could be a very easy way for you to have better security for your Bitcoin. By default, they recommend multi-vendor, multi-sig, so you have two different types of hardware wallets for your two keys. They're kept in different locations. Now, the big trade-off here, the big negative here, is that you have no privacy from Unchained, and they do KYC you. So keep that in mind. But the benefit is that they hold your hand, they have a really nice user interface, and they make it very easy for you. If you want to go the self-sovereign route and the more private route, particularly if there's, I think now more than ever, when the U.S. government is saying that they want to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve with stolen Bitcoin, consider using Sparrow. Sparrow wallet is absolutely legendary and easier to use than you think. You can just install it on your computer and use it with pretty much any hardware wallets out there. You can make a multi-sig out of them. So,
yeah. Yeah. Be aware, freaks. Use the code RHR if you want $50 off vault setup.
I feel like this just became one big Unchained ad, but I will add on to the positive side too. They now allow you to easily buy and sell directly to your multi-sig vault, which is just a nice feature.
Yeah. And while we're on it, they recently added, you can just a cash account, so you don't have to, you can load up cash and buy whenever you want now. So shout out to Unchained. Moving on, we got more grants though. OpenSats grants long-term support for Kieran Harkin, which so we were Kieran talking about earlier.
The lead dev of ZapStream. So if you join us in our Nostra stream, Kieran's the main man who helps make that possible. Huge shout out to him. Prolific Nostra developer. Also has the Snort social client, has reworked Nests. So, I mean, he's exactly the type of developer that we'd like to see get supported on the long-term support grants. As a reminder, long-term support grants aren't tied to necessarily a specific project. They are tied to the developer, developers who have shown prolific proof of work in the space. They are longer term, so they're 2 years. So they know how much fiat worth of Bitcoin they're getting every month for 2 years. So they're able to focus on their work and their families and not worry about paying the rent every month. And last but not least, the reminder that when we fund Nostra devs, it comes out of the Nostra fund. So the people who always like to complain and say like, oh, Bitcoin devs are missing out because this Nostra dev was funded, you're just completely wrong. So there you go. Both the ARC announcement and the Build announcement is for the general fund, not for the Nostra fund.
Yeah. And with that in mind, OpenSats just did its sixth wave of Nostra grants to 9 projects. And looking at it now, out of the 9, only 2 have respectable names. So Osti, Seer, Alpha Ama, Corny Chat, No Struts, Yana, Dart NDK, Jester, and Nostra Spring Boot Starter have all received grants in this latest wave from OpenSats.
What are your two favorite named ones then?
Dart, NDK, and Jester are the only two good ones. And Noster Spring Boot Starter, maybe. Everything else stinks.
Well, let it be known that the OpenSats board does not judge applications based on their name. But yeah, no, it's great to get more grants out there. We have a lot more announcements coming over the next few weeks. We're just going to be churning them out. Yeah. And I mean, I guess one other thing I would add too, is like, I actually do think that these Noster projects will help Bitcoin adoption too. So I actually do think that Noster devs are tangentially Bitcoin devs. A lot of them were Bitcoin devs first, and then they came over to Noster in the first place. But, I think that's another argument for, if you're not particularly excited about Noster and you're not a Noster user, if you're a Bitcoiner, you should still be excited about these guys and be happy they're being supported.
Yeah. On to the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, coming out of Pakistan, which is experiencing some escalating internet censorship. Pakistan is intensifying internet censorship by introducing a nationwide internet firewall and imposing stringent compliance requirements on virtual private networks, more commonly known as VPNs. The Pakistan Telecommunication Authority plans to screen and approve state-compliant VPNs. While the government cites national security as a reason for this action, critics and digital rights activists argue that these measures enhance the regime's ability to monitor and control internet activity. The impact of these restrictions extends beyond communication barriers. They can also impact access to financial services, for example, by cutting off access to alternative currencies like Bitcoin, which have provided a life raft for many Pakistanis, but which was restricted in 2018. These policies contribute to a troubling pattern of digital and financial repression for the 235 million. I didn't realize Pakistan was that big. Pakistanis living under a hybrid authoritarian regime. Similar measures have been observed in China and Iran, where the regimes exert internet controls to suppress dissent and maintain their power. If you want to learn more about these types of issues on a week in and week out basis, you can go to financialfreedomreport.org and sign up for the newsletter. It's pretty bad. Censorship is on the rise, not only in countries like Pakistan, but man, I'm not sure if you've seen it. The UK has some unrest. Oh, it is. Oh yeah. It's at the, okay. We'll get to it at the end then. Cause I have a lot of words to say about that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I would just say, we can talk about that now before we get to software releases, I think. But I would just say that, look, this is one of the reasons why, you know, Noster, things like Hole Punch, Tor, why these technologies are so important and why they're tangentially interconnected and complementary with Bitcoin. Because if we want to use Bitcoin as freedom money, the fight for freedom of communication is a key aspect of that fight. Otherwise, it'll be much more difficult for people to use digital money.
Yeah. And so, like we mentioned, it's happening in Pakistan, UK. So we'll just talk about it now. I've got two more topics I want to talk about on this topic. Obviously, pull up the video from the UK authorities. So for those who are unaware, there is a bunch of civil unrest bubbling up in the UK, which is stemming from a murder of three children. And I believe many more were harmed in a knife attack, which has created essentially a lot of people in England went immigrants out of the country now, particularly Muslim immigrants, because of this knife attack. And that has resulted in essentially street wars that have been going on for the last couple of weeks as people get very angry and meet each other for kinetic warfare. No, not warfare yet, but it seems like things are getting pretty heavy over there. And the UK government, instead of listening to the wishes of their native population, are resorting to censorship, and not only censorship, but they're attacking free speech in the sense that they will throw people in jail for tweeting, retweeting, or talking openly about the fact that they have particular views on what's going on over there right now. So just play the clip.
The offence of incitement to racial hatred involves publishing or distributing material which is insulting or abusive which is intended to or likely to start racial hatred. So if you retweet that, then you're republishing that, and then potentially you're committing that offence. And we do have dedicated police officers who are scouring social media. Their job is to look for this material and then follow up with identification arrests and so forth. So it's a really, really serious. People might think they're not doing anything harmful. They are, and the consequences will be visited upon them.
Yeah, I mean, wrapping in racism, terrorism, saving the children, in this case, wrapping it in racism and hate speech that need to be squashed out. And it's surpassed censorship now, where people are getting thrown in cages for expressing their opinions about what's going on.
Well, I mean, let's be clear here from a practical sense. Like, police officers are going through Facebook posts and X posts, and they're going to people's homes in England, and they're arresting them over retweets and comments that they've made on these social platforms. And, you know, fortunately, we have freedom of speech enshrined in America as a foundational law. So hopefully we don't see these types of techniques spread over here, but we're starting to see them spread around the world. Obviously, we just had that story about Pakistan. And I would say, and I know I'm a broken record about this, but this is where you start to see the KYC and identification of social media users, regardless if they're operating under a NIM publicly online, become a bigger and bigger concern. And so when Elon says he's going to protect anons, but he forces you through KYC if you want to use the platform in a compelling way, where most people are going and getting blue checks because they want to post longer videos because they don't want to effectively be shadow banned. He means that he's going to ID you and he's going to try to not hand over that information. And now the real question is when the British police go to him, or the Pakistani police go to him, or the Indian police go to him, or the Chinese police go to him and say, I want to know who this user is who did this retweet. Is he going to hand over your phone number and your other identifiable information? Or is he going to tell him to go fuck off and potentially not be able to sell cars, Starlinks, and Twitter ads in that jurisdiction? And I expect him to just roll over and hand over that information. So things like Nostr provide alternatives. Now, Nostr is not perfect in terms of privacy. I think there's a lot of tooling that still needs to be done in terms of leaking certain information. I think a lot of this can be done on the client level, the app level. You know, Primal, for instance, has essentially like this proxy toggle you can have on now that protects your IP address, but Primal still sees your IP address, but the rest of the network doesn't. Obviously, Primal also still has a Strike KYC wallet in it. So if you activate that wallet, you could be arrested for a Nostr post. Like, I'm not pretending that it's perfect. But the key here is this increasing trend of tying identifiable information to everything we do in our digital lives, including Bitcoin, is becoming more and more dangerous. And this is the real world effects of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's in Pakistan and the UK now, but Logan, pull up the second clip. The vice presidential candidate on the Kamala Harris ticket has come out and said that he thinks we should have similar laws, that maybe not laws, but we should censor similar speech here in the US. I think this is from an MSNBC interview from a couple years ago.
I think we need to push back on this. There's no guarantee to free speech on misinformation or hate speech, and especially around our democracy.
Yeah. I mean, it's
yeah, I mean, we definitely can't rely on politicians and regulators. No. We need technology to protect people. We need freedom technology to empower individuals to protect ourselves. And ultimately, we need people to use the technology and push it forward. You know, it's easy to think of these things as tech projects, as software projects, as hardware projects, but ultimately it's a movement of individuals. And I will just implore you one more time that if you are a prolific social media user, if you use Facebook, if you use TikTok, if you use X, if you just scroll every day on these platforms, consider playing around with Nostr. I don't expect you to delete your other accounts right away. I don't expect you to become a full-blown Nostr maximalist and go Nostr only like some of us have. But play around with the tools. Use the tools. Get familiar with them. Provide feedback to the developers of these many clients. A lot of these clients, you know, are far from perfect yet. They're still works in progress. Actionable things you can do right now is if you have an iPhone, you can download Domus. Domus is a great Nostr client. If you have an Android phone, you can download Amethyst. Amethyst is a great Android client. If on computer, phone, and both Android and iPhone, there's Primal, another Nostr client that's available on all platforms. 1031 is an investor in Primal, but they are trying to do it in a little bit more of a mainstream, less power user focused way. So it might be an easier first step for people. That's a deliberate choice. And one of the cool things about Nostr, and I know I'm a broken record, is that you own your identity. Your identity is a private key. It's not inherently tied to any personal information unless you want it to be tied to personal information. And you can move between apps. You know, OpenSats right now is probably funding 30 plus different Nostr clients. That are free and open source software that you can easily move between if for some reason one stops getting maintained, goes out of business, or starts trying to censor people.
Yeah. Start playing around with the freaks. Maybe desperately needed sooner than you realize. And on this note, while we're talking about social upheaval and stuff like that, and I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly what's going on, but I haven't seen anybody talking about this in the mainstream. Just want to flag it to everybody what's going on in Bangladesh. Again, not clear what's going on there, other than the fact that it seems like the Hindu minority that exists in Bangladesh is being hunted down by what seem to be radical Muslims. I don't know what drove it, but nobody's talking about it. I've seen videos of it on Twitter. I'm not going to pretend like I know exactly what's going on, but I think something that people should look into, particularly if you care about human rights and protecting the rights of minorities within certain borders, doesn't look good. That's all I'll say about that and all the extent of my knowledge of what's going on there. But something I saw this week that I didn't see many of the mainstream talking about that I wanted to flag. With that, we'll get into
boosts,
more optimistic talk, which is the boost, top four boosts from Rabbit Hole Recap. 316 Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. Okay, Sharp boosted 88,888 sats, 8s across the board palindrome boost. Must add clarification due to Marty's misinterpretation. The okay sign. Before it was co-opted by assholes, means okay, as an okay sharp. I'm okay, you're okay. Nashville was fire, but I thought it was a boring emoji. Quick ongoing shill for TabConf in Atlanta, October 23rd to 26th.
Great conference. The best.
Listen to last week's episode to get the context there. At Damp Shadow 1F6, boosted 69,420 sats. Nice. Starting the Columbia Bitcoin meetup in Columbia, South Carolina. The first meetup will be on August 24th from 3 to 5 p.m. at Savage Craft Brewery in West Columbia, South Carolina. Find the event on meetup.com. Stay humble and stack sats.
Great advice. Love that you're starting a new meetup.
Support your local meetup. Shout out to you, Damn Shadow. If not you, then who? We don't know because you started it. Shout out to everybody starting Bitcoin meetups out there. At Foisey. Boosted 55,666 sats. Join us for the first Bitcoin barbecue, another first. Hang out and grill at the beautiful Waters Park and Garden Inn, Lincoln Square. Some snacks will be provided, but the grills will be hot, so bring your own steaks and links to cook up, or the chef can cook them for you. This is casual outdoor meetup for Bitcoiners to chat, touch grass, and get some sun. No admission is required to attend. Event is live on Orange Pill app. Family friendly. No pets. Sunday, August 18th at 1 p.m. at 2518 West Sunnyside Ave in Chicago, Illinois.
Where is that, a bar?
No, it's at a park. And they have outdoor grills.
It's kind of weird that they just called out no pets.
That is interesting.
And dogs are allowed at Bitcoin Park. We're a pro dog facility over here.
Yes, they are. Shout out to you, Foisey, for starting a Bitcoin barbecue. Question about the no pet policy, but we'll let you explain
that. It's like specifically called out. I don't know. Like, I feel like usually if someone wants to bring a pet, they ask. Yeah. This is kind of funny that it was called out. I love all the meetups. Do we have, is it one more boost or is that our
top one more four? Boost from our good friend Eric99, boost to 50,000 sats. Stay humble, stack sats.
Great advice, sir. I have another meetup to shill because they're our boys. Western Australia is having their first Bitcoin bush bash. I don't really understand. I mean, I understand there's a north, south, east, and west of Australia, but I don't pretend to understand Australian geography. It is quite a large country. I'm aware of that fact. So Western Australia is having the Bitcoin Buso bash, which, I mean, I guess it's not in the bush, but it's kind of the same idea as the Bitcoin bush bash you guys have heard about. That's September 6th through 9th, 2024. They're on Nostr. Buso Bush Bash on Nostr and on Twitter.
Yeah. Be aware. On to software updates. Thank you for the boost, freaks. Thank you for zapping live as we record here on zap.stream. Raspberry Blitz version 1.11.1 has been released with a new web UI setup and recovery redesign. Fedimint version 0.4.0 has been released, which will enable you to change your peer DNS names and has a wallet client module rewrite. So this is the update that solves the problem that we discussed last month and the month before, which was the fact that if you're one of your guardians or multiple of your guardians, depending on how big the quorum is and what the threshold signature is to sign messages, if they got banned from DNS, and could not connect to the Federation, it would essentially freeze the Federation. And so they need to solve that problem by enabling the ability to change peer DNS names on the go after you set up the Federation. And now that has been merged into the Fedimint protocol. Anything you want to add there?
Just a big update. And the Fedimint protocol devs ship this one really quick. So fantastic to see. And I think I mentioned it in an earlier rip, but there was like a hot fix that happened that, you know, was like a manual fix. The two main federations that were suffering from this issue had been previously fixed, but it's important to have it like built in so that going forward, it doesn't become a problem.
Yeah. Next up on the software update list, ESP Miner version 2.1.9 has been released. Overheat mode improvements and fixes. Aqua Wallet version 2.0.0 has been released with RBF, lower liquid fees, and native USDT Tether transactions. And then NDK version 2.10 has been released with performance gains, new tutorials, cash adapter, and NDK wallet.
Love it.
So that is the software update section of the show.
I believe, so Pablo is the lead maintainer of NDK, Nostr Development Kit. I might be wrong, but I believe NDK Wallet is this concept that he has been teasing out that you can have Cashew tokens, so you can have Charmin eCash tokens, that are effectively tied to your Nostr identity, your NSEC. So you don't need to have a separate wallet. Obviously, Cashew is custodial, but it's programmable. And it's programmable and it's incredibly private by default. And Mint can be interoperable using the Lightning Network very easily. So it could be a really great stepping stone until we have better solutions. I know, just to go back previously to Ben Carman's departure to Taproot Wizards, one of the things that he wants to focus on is trying to make self-custody solutions better and cheaper and easier to use on Bitcoin. Until then, until we figure something out on that front, people that are receiving their first 10 sats, 20 sats, 100 sats, 1,000 sats, probably will come in through a custodial means, and Charmin eCash seems like the best trade-off balance for that. And specifically on the Nostr side, if you want people to receive zaps, whatnot, it makes complete sense to me to have it tied to that Nostr private key in the first place, so they don't have to manage multiple keys.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another part about Nostr that I think people really haven't grokked yet is the key pairs being compatible, being able to be used as Bitcoin addresses. They're multifaceted. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine, right? Like you're using Domus, right, as your first Nostr client, and you automatically have a Bitcoin wallet that is created for you leveraging Charmin eCash, and it's tied to your Nostr private key. And then you switch to Primal or you switch to Amethyst, and your sats are still there, and everyone you follow is still there, and all your posts are still there, and everyone who follows you is still there. That is incredibly powerful. And it probably will be the way many people first interact with Bitcoin.
Yeah. Whew. That was a good tight rip. Actually, we've been going for like an hour and a half now.
Love to see it.
Yeah. The went to the Zach Bryan concert in Philly the other night. I think it gave me hope. There was a lot of the age range was eclectic. Kids, teenagers, people our age, people older. Good wholesome music. Played in the rain. 80,000 people. I don't know. Made me very hopeful. The vibes are high. Good music.
Live music's good, just in general. It's people at their best usually. And I mean, I remember like specifically going to the large concerts during COVID hysteria. It was extra powerful because it was like the most enjoyable protest ever.
Yeah, it was. It really puts things into perspective. There was 80,000 people there. I'm sure all of us aren't politically aligned or different economic situations, have different thoughts on Bitcoin, but there is that common denominator of the joy for live music in this particular artist. And
$12
beers, yeah.
The old burnt out man in me would just say that put down your phones, guys. It's incredible. All 80,000 of you don't need to record the show. Just live in the moment. Just enjoy yourself. High definition recording on Netflix and YouTube or wherever afterwards.
I'm sure she doesn't listen to this show, but there was this girl, she had to be like between the ages 16 and 18. Like, she's sitting right in front of us with her parents too. I was surprised her dad didn't say anything, but she's literally like Snapchat chatting somebody like the whole time, like taking selfies of herself, Snapchatting and taking videos. It was like, come on, put your phone down. Enjoy the show.
I don't think it's the generation thing anymore. Like my dad is one of the worst. It's,
Oh, dude, at the Bitcoin conference, Trump's speech, like you literally couldn't see the stage. Everybody had their phone up. I'm like, what the fuck are you people doing?
Like my dad specifically, because it was his first Bitcoin conference. But like he's addicted to Words with Friends. He's like takes out his iPad at the dinner table and shit. Like it's a societal problem. It crosses generations.
Yeah.
We're working on
that. The Trump speech is like this thing's being live streamed. Like the video, there's 4K high def video that is significantly better than your shitty cell phone video that's catching everybody in front of you as well. Like, you don't need to do everything for the gram. I took my phone out. I took a picture of me, my brother, my wife, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law. It was the five of us. Took a picture, I grew a picture, and I put my phone back in my pocket.
Preserve the memory. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Are we boomers?
I'm glad we got that out of our system. That pissed me off so much.
We're gonna win. Chaotic week. Had a dump. Had a pump as well. We dumped and then we pumped. We're officially pumping right now. We're in the pump.
Wild times. Just getting started. Mandibles.
Governments are going broke. They're throwing people in jail for having particular thoughts. It's going to get crazy. Try to block out the noise. Focus on strengthening yourself, your family, your community, growing your Bitcoin stack. Try to block out the noise. It's only going to get crazier from here. We're less than 90 days away from the election. You're going to have that rhetoric pick up significantly. Financial system seems to be faltering. I don't expect that problem to go away. Try to get into the box and fortify your own sanctuary, your own citadel, whatever it may be and however it manifests itself.
Great advice. Stay humble, stack sets.
Peace and love, freaks.